Like with all other things, ushers adapt quickly. It's one thing I tried to teach them, the art of the pivot. When life hands you lemons.
Make lemonade?
No. First, you roll out a multimedia campaign to convince people lemons are incredibly scarce, which only works if you stockpile lemons, control the supply, then a media blitz. Lemons are the only way to say I love you, the must-have accessory for engagements or anniversaries. Roses are out, lemons are in, billboards that say she won't have sex with you unless you've got lemons. You cut De Beers in on it. Limited edition lemon bracelets, yellow diamonds called lemon drops. You get Apple to call their new operating system OS Lemon. Little accent over the O. You charge 40% more for organic lemons, 50% more for conflict-free lemons. You pack the Capitol with lemon lobbyists. You get a Kardashian to suck a lemon wedge in a leaked sex tape. Timothy Chalamet wears lemon shoes at Cannes. Get a hashtag campaign. Something isn't cool or tight or awesome. No, it's lemon. Did you see that movie? Did you go to that concert? It was effing lemon. Billie Eilish, OMG, hashtag lemon. You get Dr. Oz to recommend 4 lemons a day and a lemon suppository supplement to get rid of toxins, because there's nothing scarier than toxins. Then you patent the seeds. You write a line of genetic code that makes lemons look just a little more like tits, and you get a gene patent for the tit lemon DNA sequence. You cross-pollinate, you get those seeds circulating in the wild, and then you sue the farmers for copyright infringement when that genetic code shows up on their land. Sit back, rake in the millions, and then when you're done, and you've sold your lempire for a few billion dollars, then, and only then, you make some fucking lemonade.
And there you have it. That's the formula. That's from the Fall of the House of Usher Netflix series. And yes, if they interrupted this podcast, you've got the formula. That's how the psychopaths or the cathedral or the cabal or the octopus or the archons work. Simple formula. All of government, all of society, perhaps all of reality, as some might say, but it's right there. And so. But welcome to Aeon Byte. My name is Miguel Connor, and I am your pompous of gnosis. Welcome to this Philip K. Dick world, these Gnostic times, and this age of Hermes. And you're going to get a lot more red pills today beyond this clip from the Fall of the House of Usher, because it is always an honor to have Beth Martins on the show. Beth, how are you doing? And what do you think of the clip?
Oh, my goodness. That was hysterical. I'm totally going to send everybody to that and this interview as well. And I'm just quickly sharing it out on my Telegram because I didn't tell
you. Yeah, if I have the clip, I can send you the clip if you ever want to end your own podcast or begin your podcast, because it's like you got to play these things over and over again. It just makes perfect sense.
I know. There's one I have to send you. It's not full of truth or anything like that, but I must have watched it 27 times. Then people kept sending it back to me, and I will watch it again. And just the sheer intelligence of the humor that wasn't planned. And this one was very planned and orchestrated, but priceless. That's like just hits the nail right on the head.
Indeed. And with us too, it is also a pleasure to have Graham with us. Vance is still on vacation. Graham, how are you doing, and what do you think of the clip? Hits it on the head?
Oh, hits it out of the ballpark, that's for sure. No, I'm interested in hearing from Beth about, you know, that the ascension is in all sparkles, unicorn and rainbow parts.
yeah, that's not my subject right there.
Awesome. Yeah, it's been a while since you've been on the show. I actually looked, and it was I think it was spring of 2021, and I'm like, God, time is really flying. I mean, obviously I believe that these corrupt psychopaths at the top do like to manipulate the world with magic and other things. I don't know if they're speeding it up, or I could just get very simple and say, well, it's my age. It's simple. Time is flying. It's like, oh my God, it's already the end of April. What the hell is going on here? But regardless, it has been too long. So why don't we start with how have you been dealing with what has happened in 2020? How has your life changed, and how did you pivot to not, I would say not sanity, but maybe escaping sanity?
Yeah, that was a lot of sanity going on, a lot of reality.
Yeah, there is that saying, I think Graham mentioned it a couple of weeks ago, sanity is simply sharing the delusions of your neighbors.
I like that. Nice. Nice. Yeah, it's really been wild, as all of us could never have. Some of us did predict, right, that it wasn't actually completely out of the blue. Since 2015, I had been more awake to agendas. And when it happened, it wasn't any less devastating, but it was like, oh yeah, that's exactly what people have been saying was coming down the line, and here it is. So yeah, it's been quite an evolution from 5 minutes of complete despair, thinking I had to just pack it in, stop working. You know, the sorrow and mourning that I had just hit my stride with my work, mm-hmm. and now it was all just going to come crashing down. And after that 5 minutes, I thought, you know what, in my history, my past, I've never just laid down to die. So why would I do that now? Made no sense. And then I prayed to God. I said, what could I do right now that would help me move forward and be of service to my people? And I heard the answer to create a large training that helps people to learn how to be coaches, to learn to deprogram, to read archetypes and do what I do, because that was my idea all along. I just thought I wouldn't do it for another decade or two when I was qualified. And God's like, you're qualified, do the thing. And also, like, here's how you get qualified, is by doing the thing. So I flipped from being in a whole lot of fear to being up to my eyeballs in a creative project. It's no little thing to have a 7-month training where people are every single week getting some new material and working through that. And so I immediately booked a group of people to help me beta the training. They knew that they were along for the ride, and as I was creating it. And I've just now completed my fifth training in 4 years and graduated a number of coaches. So it is, in fact, the most satisfying work. And I thank God and all the controllers for rolling the pandemic sooner than I planned.
Good deal. Good deal. Yeah. What advice would you give? I mean, I think I was taking your course around that time, so it was meant to be, and it helped me a lot. And one of the sayings, I don't know that I got, was sometimes you got to jump off the plane and then worry about the parachute later. You got to have trust in how things are going. So,
yeah. And build the plane and fly it at the same time is an added expression to that one, where you just, creative energy is coming through. I always say that if I have to live on slave planet, I would rather slave to my purpose and to inspiration. So when it comes, I answer unconditionally.
Good deal. Yeah. And it's really remarkable what happened. And even let's take everything off the table. Let's take all the arguments. But here is the truth that, and this is something that both the left and the right should be just so angry about. Since 2020, you've had the largest wealth of transfer in the history of Western civilization, probably. I mean, the guy making lemons got a lot richer, and the other guy listening, he got a lot poorer. And somebody like you, a small business owner, or me, you know, it was terrifying. And unfortunately, a lot of small business owners didn't make it. Hundreds of thousands of them, just like people who, as we were talking on your podcast, they close AA meetings, but they left the liquor stores open. And I'm slowly getting back into AA, and it's like I'm realizing that about 30% of people that were going died. I mean, I'm like, what happened to this guy? What happened to that? You know, they went out, they relapsed, they got depressed, they lost their business, and you know, it's hard. So I would say, no matter what side of the spectrum you are, you should be really furious that this happened to us, right?
Yes, exactly. Yeah, no matter what you did with it, it did reveal a lot about free will. Maybe we'll end up talking about that. because the circumstances were irrefutable, and they were, you know, it's kind of like the sun shining on absolutely everything. It didn't discriminate on who it was going to harm. And, but yet I saw people go in such different directions with it. You know, my coach that I had worked with, I haven't seen her for a long time now, but she got married. She kept her business going every single day. She just didn't listen. She didn't comply. She, you know, snaked her way through that situation. You know, her life just got more amazing and more abundant in the whole thing. She was even in a fair amount of denial. I kept trying to, you know, but. She came from a communist country already. So she had already lived through that and didn't have this massive fear of it like we do. And yeah, so some people went up, some people went down, some people got really trapped and felt like, oh, they had to go and put, you know, foreign poison in their body in order to put food on the table. And others went, you know what? That's outside of my integrity. I'm going to risk it. I'm going to go off into the no guarantee world where, you know, as entrepreneurs, we know that there's literally nobody who's going to say, oh yeah, this is going to work. We talked about it yesterday on the hero's journey. You have to take it, but there's no actual promise of results. And, but they did it anyway, and they got results, because I think when you choose for freedom, deep down inside yourself, you are signing up for a serious partnership with God, and God favors all of that. So it doesn't mean you're going to get out of heavy or hard lessons, and things do blow up in your face and people die and all kinds of things. Very sorry for your losses, by the way, in groups. Oh my gosh, 30% of the people didn't come back from that. Wow. So yeah, just exposed how deeply we are tasked with choosing at every moment. And yes, there are circumstances that completely do victimize and take us down, but it never removes your choice. It never removes the capacity for full power. You just have to go against the grain. And you know, one of the things that I did in the last 4 years is, you know, amp up my workaholism, right? I went from one interview a week on the King Hero's Journey to three or four a week. And I created the House of Free Will, my private domain ministry, which then gave me like two operations to run at the same time. Although I moved a lot of my work into the House of Free Will, continued to coach people, continued to do courses. I invented, in fact, two courses for the Truth and Freedom Movement, the Find Your Sacred Purpose. I took it for granted. Everybody knew what they were doing here. Like when I talk to you, it's just a normal thing. You're very aware of purpose. And there were a lot of people that put their hand up saying they needed to get to square one with that. Mm. And I also created a course called Primal Power on the five primal archetypes that are there on the precipice between life and death. I think you and I might've talked about that back in 2021. So yeah, I realized how, oh, Kundalini King, that's nice. Miss you too. And yeah, so there's just so many choices we have to claim the power that we have and to forfeit the power that we have. So being alive in a human body with a human soul is an enormous responsibility. And I take that seriously. So yeah, just worked and worked and worked. And then last fall, I had a like kaboom. It was over for me all of a sudden. I hit a full stop with just everything compounded in my life. And I, to top it off, had been on a supplement I should not have been on long-term. Little bit of caution. There's so much natural health stuff going around in the freedom world. And it's easy to just glom on like, oh, so-and-so says this is good. Glug, 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 glug. And I even had a practitioner saying, oh yes, double up on it so it can, you know, clean your organs even more like this. And so okay. I'm chewing on this stuff all year long. And it turned out to be the worst thing possible ever. My digestion collapsed, absolutely came to a full stop. Didn't digest food for the better part of 3 months, lost every single bit of body fat, a great deal of muscle, even bone. There, my like sleeves were too long all of a sudden, and I was a disappearing person for a little bit there. Managed to turn it around. Big shout out to a woman that I've worked with and known for a lot of years, Sherry Rothwell, who helped me to heal with food. And even just to walk away from all supplementation for a time, just to go for the like the most basic animalistic version of healing. And here I am, and even bodybuilding and doing exercise, I'm back in, my clothes all fit now. So thank God for that. Also very much noticed how, you know, we're in a war and we are in the so-called opposition, and becoming aware for the first time in my life about what controlled opposition is. I know everybody must have some idea of that, but I'd never really come face to face with them or interviewed them or had them infiltrate my groups, and even courses at times, I believe, were somewhat infiltrated there. And it culminated in me doing an archetypes of controlled op. So that was actually fun for me, because I'm always sensing and reading patterns, consider myself a pattern hunter. And I was starting to become lucid, especially in the law world where there's so much corruption and grifters and Candyman, I called them, and the outright Satan, who know what they're doing to mislead people, who sold their soul away. And yeah, so that's been, you know, just seeing the big show. It's actually been a huge time saver, because then, you know, I don't have to listen to every character in the show and try to sort through everything.
Awesome. Well, good, good. Yeah, you've been busy. You've been fighting the good fight, as they say. So why don't we get to your work on the myth of ascension, because I think it is important. And tell us about it and tell us what's going on.
Yeah, so I've really been looking into this since 2001, when I began to recover and heal from a 3-year battle with cancer. And I had been going to India for several years in a row, and took meditation really seriously. It was a very big part of my life. And I didn't know that I was using it to vacate, to ascend up and out of my human experience. And it worked really well, because it put an end to suffering. The suffering was all here. And if I could just get even here, I wasn't suffering. I wasn't suffering anymore. And then I almost die that way. So it was not the good path. I suddenly saw, oh, wow, I can't get far away enough from myself. Or the further I get away from myself, the more dead this is. And so it created a U-turn moment in my life where I had to look back. I know we've talked about this already, but that was the beginning of seeing that it's not an out-of-body experience I'm looking for. It's an in-body experience I'm looking for. And then I spent now the better part of almost 25 years decoding and deprogramming and seeing what is actually the truth of a spiritual path that's genuinely a good one, since I had such bad results with the direction I went in. And so it's been, it's highly nuanced, and I realized how much ascension programming I had, not just from my guru in India, but from the whole life. And this was something that I saw. I recently gave a talk at an Acapulco on the ascension myth busting, specifically for King Heroes. And so I consider you one, Miguel, and anybody out there that's got the fire and the power and the bravery to get out and say the hard thing, and risking the attacks and the backlash and the cancels and the losing your channel or suspended channels and losing it. And they suffer with ascension, but it's not even necessarily in the spiritual realm. So I identified there's two versions of every program that you can distill down into these unconscious programs that are like an artificial intelligence. They operate only with tacit agreement. It's very interesting how the world is blowing up with artificial intelligence right now, because it gives you this external example to study. But lo and behold, it's of course right here. And it's probably why it works so well on us, or can potentially work well on us, because we've got that whole system inside. And so every single program, they say a whole bunch of different things. And I know you know this, Miguel, but do you want me to share just a little bit about?
Yeah, please do.
Because they're quite discreet. We have, you know, thousands and millions and maybe countless numbers of experiences that you will think are different out there. The variety is endless, literally without end. But when you see the programming underneath your, specifically what you can observe, your thoughts and your feelings, they're actually quite discrete, right? So there's four root programs, only four. Could be millions of different experiences, but only four root programs. And then those four root programs combine up with each other and with all of the feelings on the scale. This is as far as I've been able to observe it inside myself. And they create a discrete number of what I call composite programs. So the roots being, it's sitting on your shoulder. The biggest, most nemesis, you know, biggest nemesis of all is that you're going to die. You're not going to survive this. So it's falling on your shoulder in the first thing in the morning. You're going to die, Beth. You better this, you better that. Go, you know, save your life all day long. And that is unfortunately the reality. It'll tell you that you're not in control, which is a big fat lie. I always like to be the poster child of that anti-new age message that we're need to let go of control. No, dudes, that's hardwired. You got that stuff. The programming is that you're out of control. It'll also tell you that nobody loves you. You need to struggle every day and fight for the love and approval of your peers, your family, your boss, your whatever, the government. Another one that is very interesting and easy to intellectualize, but it still is a very core signature vibration, is the want for oneness. And also I saw this year how it's the same identical want for wholeness.
Because I do the three. You taught me the three when we would do our work together. Interesting, a four one, that should be a good one.
Yeah, it was always around, and I don't teach it necessarily quickly because it's just easy to think about. People resort to it thinking that, oh, that, you know, wanting oneness and wholeness sounds way better than wanting survival. So they just like, oh yeah, wanting oneness. I'm all romantic over here. And I'll often start with those three just as a way to establish, because you can get a lot of mileage, but yeah, I'm sure you could make use of that. And then, you know, other programs that have a real signature saying that if you don't get it perfect, you're going to die. Or if you do get it perfect, you're going to die. Or with the fingers pointing out that you're not getting it perfect, I'm going to kill you. Or if you do get it perfect, I'm going to kill you. So then you got the not worthy, not good enough composite program. You've got the I hate myself, I love myself. This was also a big awakening to see how, you know, the self-love movement, it's so, again, everybody loved that. Oh, you just have to love yourself and love yourself. Well, guess what? That's the high ascendant side of a program. And it has much better overall results than the I hate myself. You might not try to, you know, kill yourself or harm yourself from this loving place. But guess what? Programs are two sides of the very same coin, just like an archetype. You cannot have the what we call high functional side without having the low dysfunctional side. Mm-hmm. Right? So then people cling to the high side of the programs. You also have the winning, I call it the winning program for lack of a better way to say it, but the low side in apathy, grief, and fear is I can't win. The high side is the higher side is you can't win. And then the high side with the courage, acceptance, and peace is everybody wins, and isn't that beautiful? So that used to seem like the destination to me. And even I'm just in the process of making an audio version of my book, and it's in there, darn it. Like there's still some ascension programming in that book 4 years ago. So what can you do? I am going to make a commentary to go along with it, just to bring it more up to date rather than try to change that book. I'm going to write a new book. And so, it became more and more aware to me. Even I had intellectually picked up the idea of the high sides of the program not being true freedom, but it wasn't until the last few years when it utterly came home, especially because of the pandemic that made me run in mostly courage, right? It wasn't acceptable to be in apathy, wasn't acceptable to be in grief or fear or even lust or anger or pride. All of those were so costly to me, I couldn't afford them anymore. So I bumped up into courage. That seems fantastic. And you can ride a long time. But as you can see, I had a crash. And that's the nature of the high side, the ascension side of the programs. They cost so much energy. I even think they cost more energy to run the higher sides than the very lowest side, where you're just stuck on the couch, not caring about anything.
Yes, indeed. Yeah, I've utilized them, and they are just lifesavers, especially when you start recognizing them. I remember at first you'd be like, which is Beth? He's like, no, just follow your gut, pick one. Eventually you'll figure out, but right now just go with this want and understand it and how you have to release it. And it made my life much, much better. And again, these days it's more automatic. Before I'd have to sit for an hour. Now it's like, I get it. Nice try, Miguel, or nice try programming. And Graham, you may not be familiar, do you have a question or what do you think of this? It's always good to ask somebody who might, from the outside, if you would.
Oh, no, I'm very impressed with it. I was going to say, it sounds like Beth is basically mining the same territory Jung is with integration, where you have the, you're looking for that Hegelian synthesis of the programs. You know, the I hate myself, I love myself. Well, you know, the synthesis is I love myself for some things. There are some things I can hate myself for. That's just how the life works. Accept it, integrate it, and move on. And that reflects back to what she was talking about with the control dot, because they tend to exploit the two sides. It's like one of them will be a good cop and one of them will be a bad cop. I find that the control dot often moves in, you know, two-man teams that way.
That's really fun. I love that. So I will say a little bit about it. It's the one of the places that Carl Jung and I would diverge and maybe argue if he was here in person. So I don't see it as an integration. And the reason is that once you let a program go, and it's like Miguel was saying, it is an organization of a signature vibration of energy with you could even call it architecture. It's so recognizable, and you become a ninja over time at being able to see it for what it is. And even though there are many, many expressions, even of one signature vibration, you get to that point where you can so precisely identify it. Once it's identified, once it's felt, because that's a major gatekeeper, if you're not willing to experience it for what it is, allow it all the way to your awareness, not be off in, you know, kind of a denial or trying to be separate from it at a distance, then you're faced with a new choice. And the choice is, do I want to keep on taking instructions from this AI that I'm running? I'm not even a victim to anything else other than my own energy running that AI, or would I rather be free? And so then when you make that choice and it turns out this operating system is fully prepared to listen to us, again, because we are creating it. So the creator always controls. What's controlled can never control the creator. And so once you decide, yes, I won't be needing your service anymore. Thanks for telling me that I'm going to die. I think I'm fine. I'll look around and yeah, actually everything's fine. I'll take care of you. How's that? And then the energy literally goes from being a concentration of held energy to completely dissipated. So you can't look back. There's nothing to integrate. There's nothing to synthesize. There's no compromise that, oh, this is just how life is. You actually break the sound barrier. You go from being in a vibration and a frequency, and this comes back to the ascension, to being off the map. Right? So freedom, for lack of a better word, some people would say God and some people will say truth. And we just have pointer words. We don't have words for that which has no vibration. But all of the what might have been integration and synthesis, the purpose of all of that, what I've described, is to get off the map, to really experience freedom. That's, to me, like the ultimate, that we're here. That's no experience at all. We just can't really say that.
Makes sense. Makes a lot of sense. Yeah. And but the question on the ascension, and we talked about this yesterday on your podcast, was some have called it spiritual bypassing. And it, Indian gurus are always, a lot of them are like very careful. Don't think you need to be the man on the mountain and not face your trauma or pay your taxes or heal things with your sister or whatever. You know, the work, the spiritual work is here on earth. That's, we have a purpose. We need to work things out on earth instead of escaping. And I remember, Beth, reading Krishnamurti's book, Freedom from the Known, great book. And he was always, he criticized meditation. He said, because in the East, it makes people as limber as asparagus. In other words, they were being so high that they were easy control by the government. And it makes sense, right? We want our cattle to not have any anxiety, to be at peace, to be at one with each other, because they're easier to slaughter. And you could say the same thing from conservative religions, right? If you have every pastor at church on Sunday say, well, give it to Caesar this, but give to Jesus this. And, you know, our government is a representative of God, and trust God and have faith. You could also become very passive and just let the machine just walk all over you. So do you see that as a, and yeah, we lose our elan vital, our vitality, our, you know, we need good, strong egos, right?
Yes. You said a mouthful there. That's, I love that. Peaceful people are easy to slaughter. They really are. And this is one of my missions and what inspired me to create the work around the busting of ascension myths, because there's the scale of emotion, and it has 9 discrete steps. I've kind of talked about them a little bit already, but in order, at the very bottom, the lowest possible human vibration is apathy. That can seem like no vibration either, like a numbness, you're checked out, you just don't care. And then as you go up the scale and you start to care, you go into the grief element, which no one wants to feel, so they stay in apathy. And up the scale is fear. Again, nobody likes fear, so they tend to bump up to lust. Lust is so much better than fear, so, or it seems to be. And from there, you go up to anger. The energy becomes much more, much less fixed. Anger is more fiery, easier to take action. People love their anger, especially it's better than fear and lust. And then you go up to pride, which is a really big trap, because nobody sees their own pride for the most part until you make a serious concerted study of seeing and taking out your pride. And then courage, acceptance, and peace. So people are thinking, because this is, in my experience, a hardwired installation inside of us. And it's not a ladder up to heaven. It is a spiral that has no end. And the spiral goes in 2 directions, as above, so below. Mm-hmm. So if you get on the track of, the AI is reading me.
I've never seen that before.
I know. I only see that on Zoom. There must be a setting here now.
It must be new. It's the first time I've seen it on StreamYard. Oh, well.
Yeah, I know. First ever. Maybe it's a computer. I don't know. And so then people end up on this chasing for more or less courage, acceptance, and peace. And yeah, Gnostic flipping of tables. Yeah, go Jesus. Exactly. And then so it becomes the endless chase for peace. And that's exactly what the meditation does. It gets you into a nice, like, la-la kind of everything's okay. Oh, watch the thoughts come and watch the thoughts go. It has nothing to do with me and all of that. You know, and there's a place for it. If you're completely off the rails and you're jacked up and your nervous system won't go into parasympathetic mode to heal, then yes, those things have their place. But they
do it all the time. I love it. But yeah,
right.
Exactly. Know the game.
Yeah, good. It is a healthy part of life, especially for your nervous system. But if you're addicted to peace and you think peace is the destination, then all you're going to end up with is apathy. Because as you go through the spiral of the scale, when you hit peace, your next destination up is apathy. So the scale is a kind of closed system. And it either goes up or it goes down, and that's all. So there's this order already installed, and it's very beautiful. I found myself last night in a good, you know, and this can be very common for me as I hit the end of the day and all the work is done and I don't want to do any more work. And I just start to kind of melt and become a piece of jello. And then it's kind of peaceful. And then I go into apathy. And there I am like, I have to go to bed. I don't even care enough to go to bed. And then I'm going like, but I wonder what I would say to one of my clients right now. And actually did invent a tool for this exact, I mean, and I want to take that word invent back. I've inherited and reworked stuff that I was trained with. And so I started to do an exercise called spiraling and getting myself up the scale. And it's just such a fascinating, beautiful place to see, because you see, you are the controller of all of it. All I have to do is suggest to myself to go from apathy to grief, and there's the grief. And then I suggest to go to fear, and oh, there's the fear. Wow, I wasn't feeling fear at all. And so on and so on and so on. And then by the time I'm actually getting myself into bed, I hit peace. And it's like, okay, perfect, peace. And but I know now that the purpose of peace or any of those higher emotions is so you can do what you said, you know, look and you know, if it's your relationship with your sister, or it's this thing that you're trying to get past, or it's the beast inside of you that is telling you that, you know, everything's wrong, you're wrong. My version of a program last night is that there's something wrong with me. And I've heard this from people a number of times also. It's a composite, comes down to that not good enough. So I was really able to see from that place of peace, I could see that program. And then I was tasked like, okay, Beth, now what are you going to just go into spiritual bypass and denial and try to sleep it off? It's like, no, I laid there for 40 minutes and I released on that program layer upon layer upon layer upon layer, and was in a genuinely restful and healed place in order to sleep after. So it's very different, and it is that exact cure for the bypass that you're talking about.
Very much so. And you would say, you talk about the AI, the programming, and then this is the the usual suspects, our trauma, ancestor karma, maybe past lives, societal programming. Is that what the programming is, you would say?
Actually, those are all signs and symptoms of the programs.
Oh, okay.
They're not the actual architecture, the organization and signature vibration of how the energy is in your system, but they're signs of it. Yeah, that's one of my missions in the truth world, because people say like, oh, you know, you listen to the government or you love the government. That's programming. And it's true, but it's just the outside edge of it. And if you try to work at that outside edge level, you get very, very limited results. Then you're pushing around furniture on the Titanic, you're wrestling with matter. And if you take on the wrestling match more inside yourself, where matter is in the blueprint and potential phase, because that's what programs are. They're like to me, like archetypes. they are a blueprint and a potential that if you fill it with your life energy, which is really you and God filling and imbuing those programs with life, they have no life of their own whatsoever. Yeah. So then it's getting into that deeper layer and right. having the bravery. This, it's no little thing. Right. Good on you. You had a lot of work under your belt, Miguel, when you began to use this. You were no stranger to looking at your own life and to feeling and to being honest with yourself. And it does require that. This could technically work for anyone, but without some of that foundation, then it can be near impossible. March harder for men. And if I get back to the king hero side of things, how the expectation for a man culturally, and I think by design as well, you know, being full of testosterone and muscle and power, and, you know, women being much more soft, tasked with looking after children, the much more accessibility to emotions a woman has, and then the cultural acceptability of feeling and showing those emotions, which is not the destination either, by the way. So that's another trap of its own. So men, you know, we're all born. I remember my dad telling me a story how he was born little, and that was a problem for his dad. They had been victims in the Bolshevik Revolution, literally massacred, half their family dead or carried away, never to be seen again. They fled to Canada, and began their life in a state of trauma, like you were saying, PTSD, terror every day. And so my dad, being a small, helpless first child, was wrong. So, you know, like, something's wrong with you was the program that it got installed, the you can't, and then the internalized I can't. And a baby can't anything, not a single thing. They can cry and suck. That's it. They're done. And so it's very sad that programming gets placed in that, you know, immature, natural place to be. A sprout is a sprout. We don't sit and criticize the sprout for being a sprout. It's just where it's at. And then so we spend the whole life desperately trying to go from I can't to I can. And, you know, you do a lot of work and you train yourself and you go the distance and you do the marathon, and all of a sudden, I can walk, I can this, I can that. And it's good. That needs to happen. It is a normal part of especially physical development and skill development. But we get trapped in the programming of it. We get addicted to the feeling of I can. For example, so many, especially women, have come to me over the years with a problem that they can't, say, be valued for their life's work or their purpose. And they have a list as long as their arm of the trainings that they have done. So they're skilled. They've got all of these now, maybe, you know, and some talents and all of the skills. And then they come to me, but all the programming is telling them that they can't, and that they're not worthy, and that nobody loves them, and they're not in control of their lives. And then sometimes they do the work, and the conclusion can be that, oh, I need to go and do more training like this instead of actually get out in the world and use it. Well, men can be quite the opposite, where they can take a little bit of knowledge and run with it. That's been where I'm more masculine, actually. I've done that all my life. And then you just get out with it instead of going, oh, is anybody going to love me? You're more programmed to take the risk of stepping into the I can, even before you feel like you can. And that's a gift. You're gonna do some great things in the world that way. But if you stay trapped in the programming of that, then it is a constant drain of life force and energy. Because again, programs are so expensive energetically. That's why they're so healing to let go, because you get back so much of your energy.
Yeah, very good point. And with that energy, that's when you can do the real work and feel freer and just expand your life. Yeah, everyone, for those of you joining us late, Beth Martins is here giving us an excellent talk on the myth of ascension. If you have a question for her, please super chat them so we can separate them from the group and Graham can get into them. And yet, why don't we talk about archetypes? Because you're talking about the spiraling. And I know, obviously, you differ from Jung. And I was thinking there's a quote that Jung once said, thank God I'm Jung and not a Jungian. Because he always said that, he never thought that his work was the end all or be all. He always hoped that others would take his ideas and expand and tweak them. And even his ideas of archetypes, he changed his mind like two or three times during his life, because he was always, things change. We're discovering new things. So tell us about how archetypes work in your system.
Yeah, the main difference with Carl Jung is that he did consider them to be entities. And I agree that they act like entities. They do act like entities. They've got a discrete kind of a form to them. I have contact with entities, for lack of a better way to say that. And it's markedly different from what I see in the archetypes. Again, calling them more of a blueprint or a lens that the life energy shines through and creates very specific, mappable, trackable patterns of thinking, of behaving, and of manifesting in the world. So they are a beautiful, reliable map of consciousness. And it's a way to know yourself and to know others and learn how to interact with yourself and others, knowing that you have that energy. The big example I think I've probably talked about before, but maybe not for a long time, is I discovered that when I was sick and dying and I couldn't figure out what was taking the life out of me while I was doing everything possible, everything good, all the best, everything I could possibly imagine, still dying. And I was able to see that one archetype was so dramatically out of alignment. For me at that time, it was two really, but I focused a lot on the one rebel. Mm-hmm. Right. I tried not to be a rebel because being a rebel got me in so much trouble when I was young. I was an outcast. I was, kicked out of my family at times. I was put in institutions. I spent a night in jail. I, got wrapped up with all the wrong people, one in particular. And then I made a new choice later in life. Oh, I just want to be a normal person and have everybody like me. And then I'll be acceptable in society and I'll make money and I'll be able to go to India every year, which is my hidden secret agenda. And all it got me was nearly dead. So it's like, okay, this isn't working. And when I was able to see how badly suppressed that rebel archetype was, mm-hmm. And then I was able to make a new choice. And the choice was that I want freedom more than I want to be acceptable, than I want to even survive. It was a time of facing death itself, the program of death, which is definitely a program. And you can say that and know intellectually there's no death. I had that paradigm already. But when you face death, it's different. It's very, very different. It's not the high ideal. Oh, there's no death. We don't have to worry about death. And just like you haven't met death if you have that experience. So that all catapulted me into reclaiming. This is where what you were saying, Graham, about the integration and the synthesis, it was calling back something I had installed in me, whether I'm the installer, God's the installer, who knows how we come with those things. But I was able to call back that part of my soul that really needed to stand up, that needed to say no, that needed to be the weirdo, risk everybody thinking that I'm not normal. And a lot of nuances there. And when I was able to bring that part of myself back to my awareness, it really never went anywhere, right? It's just between you and your awareness. And I stopped pushing it away and slamming it down. Then all the energy I used to push and slam it down that was costing me my life, because that would have otherwise been healing energy, it returned to my system. And that's when I went from dying to living. So it was a huge demonstration to me about how the archetypes work. Another archetype that was really at play was the nurturer. This has been a big focus of mine on that. And I'll get to that spiral of the archetypes as well, for sure. But I just want to throw this in because I had such a poignant example of it day before yesterday. The nurturer is something that most everybody in my world suffers. They are helping spirits. When I asked at an Acapulco, put your hand up if you're a helping spirit, everybody put their hands up. And that's part of the hero's journey, that when you start to overcome your own obstacles and trials, you want to be of service. We talked about that yesterday in your interview with me, which I do highly recommend everybody check out, that once you gain some recovery for yourself, then you turn into a sponsor. Then you start helping other people and offering them what was given you when you were down. And so that nurturer, it was a big part of why I was in that world with my family's business. But It is incredibly different. I literally was so blind to the nurturer. I had no idea that I had it. That's how immensely suppressed it was. So even though I was doing cartwheels and everything possible and working around the clock to save my family's business during a very big economic downturn in the 90s, I didn't see that side of myself. I didn't see how I was killing myself with that nurturer energy. My mom, I didn't even see my mom as a nurturer at all. She always expressed more like hate, you know, not liking that she was responsible for all the children and looking after the home and all the nurturing kind of things. And it was a surprise to me to find that energy as well. And then I was on the call with a beautiful woman in Canada here, just getting to know her, seeing if there's maybe some work we're going to do together. And 5 minutes before our call, where she had some me time, so to speak, if you want to call it that, her brother came and dropped off the baby. And so she's there in the call, literally trying to work on this exact shadow of always being the one who everybody turns to when they fall down. And she's like doing this with the baby. And it was just like the most poignant illustration of how that happens, that we can end up taking care of everybody and not taking care of ourselves. And you end up, you know, the shadow looks nothing like the nurturer. You end up literally, secretly though, resenting and hating people that you help, because you come up short every day. This is something I'm going to be doing a training on. This particular nuance is what I call the nurturer's pendulum swing, where you help everybody like an athlete, heroically going the distance, doing everything. You crash, you burn, and you help nobody, and you hate everybody, and you tell them to get away forever. And then you recover from that and you forget, because you've got the blueprint of the nurturer, and you go back to helping everybody in that heroic way. And this cycle goes on and on and on and on. And it's a torture. It's a torturous life. So people think that, you know, being a good nurturer means just say no. Well, that's nothing. There's no truth in that. If you are a nurturer, you are built for serving and helping others. You can't not do it. So whether you're helping everybody or helping nobody, both are a kind of torturous thing. So I'm on a mission to help the helpers. And so that's going to be coming up fairly soon with a free training on the outset. So if you check in at my website, you'll be seeing that fairly soon. And yes to the spiral and the ascension. So every archetype itself has the potential for ascension, to go from a shadow, more enemy version of the archetype to a high, enlightened, awakened place where the gifts are all there for your using in a conscious way. It's fantastic, but it's still a map and it's still a vibration. So the spiral of the archetypes, as I've conceived it, as you've asked, as I write about it in my book, it starts with the child archetype, the beginning of everything, the shadows being confusion, the feeling like you're lost, like you have no purpose. You get lost, especially in two experiences of betrayal and abandonment, which are very close, if not identical, experiences when you study the signature of them. And it's the time when God is calling you, saying, you have a purpose. Are you coming on your hero's journey? And you either head for under the covers and go into denial and try to hide or wait out the conflict that might have sent you there. Pandemic, a lot of people just went and laid it under the bed and or under the covers and watched Netflix. And some of us got out there and just started to do the thing, even when you don't know what the thing is, because I didn't know what the thing was. I was just like listening moment to moment. And so going up the scale, once you resolve, you tell God you're coming, you go up the scale into that rebel archetype, you decide you're going to take on the fight and not hide from that out of fear of not surviving it. And you can get lost in that rebel without a cause, that rails against the machine and fights everybody and is such in a habit of fighting that you don't even know a good thing when you see it. You fight against it, say no to everything. And once you find your purpose to fight, that moves you forward up on the journey, ascending to the warrior archetype, where you're much more, you're going to train, you're going to build your adeptness at handling conflict, inner and outer. You're going to decide to work with goals, so you're not just always troubleshooting your life and the problems that go wrong. You're going to put positive things out in front of you to reach for. And then you're going to slay the demons and the dragons inner. Maybe it's like a woman being tasked to build something real and tangible and manifest, or a man more to like feel the feelings, can be definitely a warrior kind of a thing. And then that moves you forward into this nurturer that I was talking to. And if you build the boundaries that are based in reality and deprogrammed to that degree of being able to walk in the world as a helping spirit without killing yourself, it moves you forward again into the lover and the hedonist archetype, which is much more about the soul, much more about receiving direct information and transmissions without needing anybody's permission. Am I okay? Am I okay? Kind of thing. And then if you risk that and you don't get lost in obsession and compulsion and the search for lies, thinking it's the search for truth, which it's not, and the emptiness, the bottom of which could be addiction and the absolute absence of purpose, and you find that new purpose and the pleasure of purpose and the love of purpose, that moves you forward to ascend into the king. And the king, you might think, is the top. That's like the king of the castle. You're at the top, but you're actually not at the top. You're still going to have demons to slay around power, being vulnerable to a little bit of power. We tend to, if we think we are the source of that power, then you are vulnerable to corruption in a big way. And you start to dominate. We have got a lot of examples in the world of that kind of domination. And so the king needs to call on the last archetype, the highest archetype on the spiral, being the alchemist, the one that is much more looking inward, seeing the fractures of consciousness. This is where Jung and I would more agree, how consciousness, just like the body, will put off things that need to be handled in good time when there's capacity and capability. The mind and the heart are going to triage the healing and give you many opportunities for wholeness. That's the superpower of the alchemist. And when you can handle either conflict and problems or building and manifesting here instead of always the muscle out there, you can conserve energy, you can conserve time. Someone doesn't even know you have a problem with them. They don't even have to know. And it can be completely resolved. Or somebody you're having a problem with right in front of your face, that problem could be resolved in the same conversation. It is where deep healing takes place, can be physical, emotional, spiritual, ancestral, like you talked about on my podcast yesterday. And it seems like the pinnacle. Your life becomes a demonstration of sage wisdom. This is where you return with the elixir. You give back everything that you've learned on the journey. And your mission to, now this is my secret hidden agenda, returning humanity back to nature, mm-hmm. right? Which is kind of the beginning. And it sets you on the beginning again. So reaching the pinnacle experience of the alchemist only means you're going to be starting over if you choose it. Now, all of that being the same with the spiral of emotion, all of that map, the purpose of those maps is freedom. So it's not in and of itself to be the highest excelling any archetype or all the archetypes or to be, you know, slaying on your hero's journey. That is I hesitate to use the word program. I don't like to use the word programming for that, but that's the installation. That's a hardwiring Some people might say simulation. I'm actually closer than I ever have been to believing in a simulation theory. The only difference for me would be that it's us creating the simulation, not the Archon enemy creating the simulation. So yeah, that's a really big mouthful there.
Hey, shining crazy diamonds. Please subscribe for the second part of this interview. It certainly helps grow this Red Pill cafeteria. What's more, beyond getting the second half, you get content earlier and don't have to worry about flapdoodle commercials here or on other public platforms. So please become a Red Circle sub, Patreon, or AB Prime member for the full consciousness expanding gnosis. At Patreon, I have tiers as low as $1 or $3 a month. And at Red Circle, it's a clean $4.99 a month to stream all full shows. All subs include a dedicated private stream that works on most apps. Don't forget the Gnostic Tarot, which is selling well and optimizing spiritual growth based on the feedback I've gotten, and the Virtual Alexandria Academy. I can't do it without you. Thanks for being here. Thanks for being yourself, your true self, here in the desert of the real. Hello and goodbye, as always.